Are you excited to hear thoughtful discussion on well-made post-apocalyptic martial arts films? Then find another show, because we're talking about the 1995 live-action version of the Japanese anime Fist of the North Star on
B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello, welcome to B-Movie Mania, where we discuss really bad movies and talk about them and force you to listen. I'm Chris Hudson, and with me, as always, are my fellow B-Movie Maniacs.
I'm Jason Hulls.
Mike, who are you?
I'm Paul Brooks.
No, I'm Paul Brooks. And good day to you, listeners.
No.
Good day or good evening, wherever you may be or whenever you may be listening to the podcast.
Do we have two mics or two Pauls?
Yes.
Two Pauls?
Do we have two Pauls now?
Mike, did you change your name?
Who are you guys talking to?
You.
I'm Paul.
Talking to Peeps number two.
Mike's a little confused tonight because he's joining us from Atlanta, Georgia this evening.
Why?
Because this is where they let you sit in a hotel room nude while
yeah,
your
you
friends
do.
Watch you on a webcam.
You are not wearing much clothes.
It's a good thing this isn't a web show.
Thank God.
Well, I'm going to take a picture of him so we can post it on
the podcast.
Hold on,
guys. I dropped a cookie. Hold on. Let me get this cookie.
Oh, no. No,
I
this is going
cookie.
To...
Hold on.
Oh, God. No, my God.
I'm so
no.
Scared.
Oh, son of a bitch. You know, I've seen Mike's ass so many times, and it hurts every single time.
Desensitized.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Fist of the North Star. Well, a little recap. So, Shin, the Master of the Southern Cross, kills Malcolm McDowell, the titular Fist of the North Star. At least he's the titular Fist of the North Star for about, you know, the first 5 minutes, 4 minutes of which are credits.
He also has the titular line in Fist of the North Star.
Did he? I didn't catch that.
Yeah,
there's
does.
A lot of
yeah,
things I didn't catch about this one.
Yeah.
My work is done, Shin. I am ready to die. But I am Fist of the North Star, and you are Master of Southern Cross.
I am the Master of Southern Cross.
I
don't think there's anything to be caught, let's be honest.
I watched it twice to make sure I didn't miss anything, and I'm still not sure.
I'm just going to let you get through this summary before we start talking about the differences, and I think I might be the only one who remembers the anime decently well.
You don't remember
because there's
shit.
Quite a few differences.
So, yeah, so I guess Shin raises some sort of Mordor-looking city, like this Dark Tower of Sauron, where he he rules over his minions, the Crossmen. But I kept wondering, where does he get food, fuel? You know, it's not like he's got a lot of agriculture going on in this apocalypse. Then we cut to a village 200 miles away that mines other ruins for food, which is usually in the form of product placement like Jolt Cola and some Chef Boyardee bullshit.
I don't remember any Jolt Cola product placements.
Hey, if you pay attention to the credits, there is a huge list of product placement. You have to go back and watch it, and Jolt Cola is one of the things
you're joking.
Credited. No, if only.
Wow.
There was 200 things on this list for product placement, none of which I saw in the movie.
Chris used to love Jolt Cola back in the day.
Oh, I drank the hell that and Water Joe back in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't... So, when I think apocalypse, I think the thing to get me through it is Jolt Cola.
Wait a minute. Water... Did you say Water Joe?
Water Joe. Caffeinated water.
Hmm? Is that just is that a liquid version of a Camel cigarette?
Well, you know, if you replace the nicotine with caffeine, I guess... And put a Camel on the label, yeah. So our city with our heroes is attacked by Clint Howard and Chris Penn. Now, Clint Howard, the amazing martial artist he is, for some reason used a gun to just pick off dudes left and right. I don't know what
okay.
he's doing.
Can I just say real quick, I like Clint Howard a lot. I wish Clint Howard had Chris Penn's role in this thing. I think he fit the part. Mike Clint Howard fits the part more. No, yeah.
I don't, you'd at least be more entertaining.
No. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought Chris Penn did a pretty good job in this role.
Neither of them deserve to do whatever the fuck they did in this movie.
I know. I thought Chris Penn was actually good in this role. Every time he was on the screen, like, this is the best thing about the movie. When Chris Penn is the best thing about your movie, you got a little more trouble.
He had some cheesy one-liners. His one-liners were rough.
It ain't easy being sleazy.
It ain't easy being sleazy.
Welcome to the future.
They both deserve to be like wisecracking fucking rats in New York is what they deserve to be. That's it.
Now, Clint Howard shows up for a second scene later in the movie. He's in like two scenes, right? Does he die? Did I miss that? I don't know. He's probably still alive wandering the wasteland. Maybe he'll be the next Fist of the North Star.
Do you think it's distracting to have... I mean, maybe he wasn't as known then, and then... was this, 95 or something?
He was definitely known. Dude, he's been known since the 60s.
Right, okay. That's kind of what I thought. If that's the case, then, isn't it kind of distracting to have him in there for, like, a second? You expect him to do more?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the situation where you get, like, if you're doing a horror movie, you get Robert Englund for a couple days to, like, be able to have a little bit more name talent in there. I don't know.
And if you're making a shitty movie, you get Clint Howard and Malcolm McDowell.
And yeah, Malcolm McDowell was in one room. It was in the opening scene.
Well, Malcolm McDowell, at least, like, he was in the opening scene, but he was also the narrator throughout the movie. So they got, like, stuff, and he's good at narrating. So,
and his voice came out of a zombie at some point.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true.
And anyone with flashing, glaringly blue eyes, he did the voice for them, too.
Oh, God, we're getting way ahead of ourselves again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we got to back up. So Clint Howard, Chris Penn attack the town, and immediately afterward it starts raining, and everyone who survived in the town starts yelling, "Bad rain! Bad rain!" And I kept thinking they're covering up their water supplies and their Jolt Cola and everything, but I'm thinking, the bad guys are on motorcycles. Is it just raining badly on the town, and just like 20 feet outside of it, the bad guys are okay on their little bikes and stuff?
It was raining Jolt Cola.
That's probably what it is.
A Jolt Cola pipeline burst and was raining down.
They just mistook it.
So what do you think about how Ken, like one of the signs that Kenshiro, that he was special, was that he could walk in the rain?
Did he walk in the rain? I saw him do a lot of wandering, but never in the rain. It was just always windy.
No, he did.
Did he?
Because the kids noticed him doing that.
Yeah. When he saved that kid, like, that's when... they're like, "Hey, he's out in the rain," and then they're like, "You know, oh no!" And he's just like, "I don't know, fuck off, kids. I don't care. I don't like kids." Like, that's what happened.
Totally missed that in my two viewings.
Yeah. I didn't mind the fact that he could walk through the rain. I thought that was cool.
If you're gonna be the heir to the Fist of the North Star, you got to have some sort of power.
Can I get a little bit of backstory real quick with you guys?
Sure.
Well, if I understand correctly, Jay and Chris, you were both fans of the anime version of this?
Yeah, way back. Yeah. Like 20 years ago. 25, yeah. I don't know.
The anime came out in the 70s or 80s?
85 or 84,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, but I don't think it came out here until like the late 80s, early 90s.
And,
okay.
And then had you seen the live-action version of it at some point?
No, this is the first time.
I never had either.
Oh, wow, okay. Just curious.
You know, and maybe I'll talk about this more later, but if they had borrowed actually a little bit more from the anime and held to it a little bit more, I think things would have made more sense, and it would have just been a more enjoyable story.
Wait a minute. Are you claiming that this movie didn't make any sense?
Well, no. I could kind of tell. It helps to have seen the anime to know what they're going for, but I can't imagine what you guys must have thought.
The reason, Jay and Chris, that I brought up the question of the anime, I want to mention this real quick before I forget about it. Jay, you and me have a little bit of history with the anime version because you and me used to be in a band together in high school called Dimension Zero, and you wrote a song about Fist of the North Star. Is that correct?
You know, Yes, and I can't believe I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so, did you really song not? Called A Place to Die from our old high school band Dimension Zero, which we used to when we played shows. I think we almost always opened with that song.
We did, and actually I cut a music video to the song from the anime.
Oh, that's right. We should try to track that down and see if we can post it below.
Yeah, and I've got it somewhere on VHS.
As a special treat for our listeners, you're playing it tonight, right?
Well, listeners, get ready, because here's a soundbite right now.
Everyone burns up, only a few survive, and the rest just battle for decent place to die. In this world of sadness, in these barren rhymes, in this domain of sin, where our story ends.
Boom.
Dun, 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 dun,
boom.
Dun.
There it was. Is that how it goes, Chris?
Fist of the North Star, gonna go down to get the Fist of the North Star.
Nope, not even
Mike
close.
Was our singer.
We're gonna cut that out, right?
Yeah.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare cut that out.
No, that's a great bit of trivia that I cannot believe I forgot about.
Exactly.
Sure.
Sorry, Chris.
I found my tape of it the other day.
Sorry, Chris. Yeah, where were we in this recap? We've got Chris Penn and
so, yeah, we got
this.
Raining. Ken wanders the apocalypse for, I don't know, did anybody get a sense of how much time passed over the course of this movie?
Three and a half years.
It felt like eternity to watch it, but.
Yeah, I think it was a couple days, like a week.
One of my biggest criticisms of it is just they didn't really ever give you a good sense of geography or time.
No. Yeah. Oh, God.
Like, even in the scenes, I feel like there weren't nearly enough wide shots. I could never really tell who was where. And I feel like they had the budget to do.
Oh, it had a pretty big budget. I mean, it had a budget of $7 million, but it looked like it had a pretty decent budget. It looked good.
The sets look fine.
A lot of fog, a lot of shit to hide their deficiencies, but it looked like they put a lot of money on the screen.
It's just the jolt mist that's rolling across the plains.
I think the only establishing shot they had was of that building that the guy fucking lived in.
Yeah, the Tower of Sauron, I guess.
Yeah, it was like, it was just that. It was, everything else was just like, it felt like, here's a scene, here's a studio scene, here's a studio scene, we're all on sound stages or something somewhere else. Like,
yeah, I really think just if they had staged a few more wide shots, perfect example, I know I'm jumping a little bit, but I'll make this brief. In the end, when Ken is walking in to try to face Shen for the last time, like he enters Shin's building and it's this big lobby, and all of a sudden people just jump at him from off camera when he would have seen them coming for like 30 feet away. Like they just were mysteriously just right in his face, and it's like, dude, I can tell he would see them walking up to him. So like they didn't do enough wide shots to kind of set the scene for things.
No.
But that was also probably my biggest gripe.
Just to tag on to that real quick, that's where the Matrix got the idea, right? Like the Wachowski siblings saw that scene and went, let's make a movie.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
That's 100% the Matrix.
The Matrix is a total ripoff of
this is the Chosen One.
That's the quote for this episode.
And at some point in between all this, we get a flashback from Ken's old girlfriend who's been girlfriend-napped by Shin in their original fight. We get a flashback, like Ken and Shin, Kenshiro and Shin knew each other, and apparently had a fight over a girl who had some seeds that will, end the apocalypse somehow. It's like a handful of seeds totally counteracts the effect of apocalypse. But Shin does some special martial arts move, which presses his fingers into his chest, so he gets these, fingered chest wounds that look kind of like octopus suckers on him. So
pepperoni pizza.
Pepperoni pizza.
It looks like nipples. Don't fucking pretend they don't look like nipples.
They do look like nipples. So Ken's
that would have been awesome. If they were nipples. So his touch makes you form nipples.
Tell me
you love me! Never! Never!
Ah! his nipple wounds. So he's walking around with these little nipple wounds all over, and it's like a code for, like, Ken's here. Ah, you know, seven wounds. And that's how Chris Penn, when this little girl knows that, shouts his name, Chris Penn is like, tell Shin seven wounds, and he'll automatically know what he's talking about. So, yeah, so they save the little town. The? Yeah. It makes as much sense in the actual movie. So
it's like the code for Ken's back in town.
Ken's back in town. He's back, baby. So, yeah, so we'll skip ahead a little bit. Ken saves the town, but the little kung fu kid dies, and then he goes to fight all the dudes in the Tower of Sauron, and I guess Shin, the evil bad guy, sends Chris Penn to be all rapey with the girlfriend in some, like, clock tower, like
a,
I guess.
Yeah, I was like a clock tower, right?
I don't know. It's like a coal-powered clock tower, because wasn't there, like, a furnace and then a bunch of gears? So
yeah, lots of gears.
Yeah, so Chris Penn gets all
just
rapey.
General undescribed industrial location. Yeah.
That whole scene
raping.
That whole scene reminded me of the Hudsucker Proxy for some reason, because like that old guys that lives up in the clock tower, right? And like, but I kept thinking of that movie, and I'm like, God, I wish I was watching Hudsucker Proxy instead.
We all were.
Fist of the Hudsucker.
Yeah, so we have a big kind of crappy fight between Ken and Shin to bring us to climax, I guess. And Julia rips off Chris Penn's little electrical tape mask, which I guess Ken almost caused Chris Penn's head to explode in their earlier fight, in the flashback fight. But we never actually see anyone's head explode.
Well, no, you missed this point, though, of like the punch of the North Star is this whole weird thing, right? And it, like,
looks like your little brother annoying you.
Yeah, no, okay, well, that's another thing that they talk about in the anime that they sort of tried to adapt, is that in reality, Ken and Chris Penn's character are brothers, and they fought a long time ago, and Ken did his special punch on him, and his head was going to blow up, and so he put all these straps on his head to keep his head from blowing up, so he always had to wear those straps.
I thought that was kind of cool.
No, that was cool. Yeah, that was fine. The one cool thing about this fucking movie.
Yeah, it would have been cool if they'd explained it a little better, or at all.
Yeah.
I mean, no. That was the most obvious thing in the whole fucking movie. Like, you got that. Everything else was absolutely convoluted garbage.
I got it. I just like that, you know, a lot of times when you have, like, apocalyptic movies, there's a lot of sort of, like, cool road warrior costumes that don't serve a whole lot of purpose. But the fact that he kind of had that look and there was a reason for it was at least kind of cool.
Chris Penn's head explodes. Ken defeats Shin somehow with not even a cool punch or anything. It looks like it just looks like it knocked him out. He did the special punch on him, but the dude's head didn't explode or anything. He just kind of at the end, he just punched him and I guess killed him. Could have knocked him out. So for all we know, Shin survived the live action version of
that's,
the movie.
That's kind of this movie in a nutshell. Things could have happened, but there were missed opportunities.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Shin did his magic power on Ken. Like, Shin hit him with the special South Cross move, and Ken's, like, arteries explode. He's spraying blood everywhere, and his wounds open back up.
Blood spray?
And then, like, blood spray.
Blood spray.
And then probably 15 seconds later, he's just healed. And maybe he's healed because he's the North Star, I don't know. But I thought that was weird, and another thing that wasn't explained, because, like, dude, he was spraying, like, Kill Bill levels of blood out of his arms.
Well, maybe that's an anime thing. I don't know.
I'd say it was more like Betty levels of blood.
That would be a Kung Pao Enter the Fist reference for all of you B-movie maniacs out there listening.
Kung Pao Enter the Fist of the North Star.
Hey, Chris, how come we haven't mentioned Downtown Julie Brown yet?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I totally forgot she was in this. Yeah, she's easy to miss. I mean, she's like this engineer, I guess, but she doesn't say her famous catchphrase. I mean, she's the one who...
She's easy to miss!
Wait. What do you mean she doesn't say her famous catchphrase?
Wubba, wubba, wubba. Goodbye.
Well, she's not playing Downtown Julie Brown in the movie. That would be a little weird, wouldn't it?
Oh, you think... No, she is totally playing Downtown Julie Brown. Like, if you look in the credits, Downtown Julie Brown, played by Downtown Julie Brown.
I missed that part.
That's how it goes.
Guys,
that's how
it okay, goes. So I know who Downtown Julie Brown is. She was on MTV and all that kind of stuff. But here's the question I have to ask. Was her catchphrase really wubba 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 wubba?
It was. Wubba wubba goodbye.
Can we find that clip?
Oh, we got to find the clip just to see it.
Edit it in.
I'm not editing that in. I'm editing this episode, and you will hear no wubba wubba wubba.
Oh, come on.
You guys have yet to answer that question of mine.
I assume so. It was actually Downtown Julie Brown was actually a little bit before my time. Chris, you might kind of have more of a memory of that.
Yeah, that was when I was all into MTV, before 120 Minutes and Frank Black.
So that was actually her
before
catchphrase.
Before Frank Black?
That was actually her catchphrase, yeah.
Related to Downtown Julie Brown, what other MTV VJ should have been in this film, and what would they do?
Hmm. Well, I know the good Julie Brown had a show on MTV for a while, but she was never a VJ, but could we replace her?
I mean, was a different Julie Brown?
Yeah, the good Julie Brown.
Uptown Julie Brown?
Uptown Julie Brown. You'd think so. No, she's the one who had the supermodel, like the beauty queen on Rampage song or something. I don't know. She was actually pretty funny and was in Earth Girls Are Easy, if I remember right.
I think that was Judy.
With Jeff Goldblum.
Judy Tenay.
Judy Tenuta.
Judy Tenuta. Tenuta. I got Mike Tenay and Judy Tenuta confused.
Okay, really what I'm getting at here with this question is, Paul, shouldn't Matt Pinfield be in this movie?
I mean, obviously, my choice is going to be Matt Pinfield, who was a MTV VJ in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was the host of MTV's 120 Minutes. Previously, I mentioned me and Jay's band Dimension Zero. I called him Matt Pinfield, but our drummer Al referred to him, of course, as Matt Pinfag. And yes, I totally think.
And that was back when you wouldn't swear or flip anybody off, too, Paul. So that was a big deal for you.
That was a long time ago. That was approximately 6 to 7 years ago.
It was a point when Paul wasn't a crass piece of shit.
I know it's hard to believe,
dude. He wouldn't swear. He wouldn't say any bad word.
And now,
or he wouldn't flip anybody off. And it was a giant deal when everyone saw him flip off the hostess of Denny's.
Which hostess was that, Paul?
Oh, you.
Me? I was never a hostess at Denny's.
Well, guys, let me just say for the record now, fuck.
Wow.
All right, Jay, to answer your question.
Wait, I'm not done, Mike. I'm not done.
God damn it.
I want to talk about Matt more. Matt Pinfield, who was on MTV in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was the host of MTV's 120 Minutes. And, you know, I think that he would add an authenticity to this film because there's a lot of stuff that they got wrong. And if he was in this film, he could kind of show up and, you know, he's kind of this, like, walking encyclopedia. So I assume that, you know, he knows a lot about music, but I assume that he probably knows a lot about other things like anime and stuff like that. So he could kind of come onto the scene and, like, when they're getting something wrong in the live-action movie, he could just fix the situation and get more of that anime vibe going on.
You know what? That's a fantastic answer. Because all of these things that we're wondering about, why did this happen, Matt could just show up and explain.
Exactly. That's what he does.
You know what? I'm changing my answer for MTV personality to be in this show. I'm changing from the regular Julie Brown to Beavis and Butthead.
I think Jay said VJs, not
I was kinda
MTV cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, well, all right.
You could pick that guy named Dave. Remember, I don't remember his last name.
Dave. No, I know who you're talking about. He placed second in the VJ contest, but that fucking Jesse guy just flamed out after like a week, so they picked Dave.
There are literally two VJs that beat anyone everyone ever fucking mentioned, and I am baffled that none of you mentioned them.
Who?
One, Kurt Loder.
Oh, God. He just did the news. The MTV news.
Kurt Loder would have been a great fatherly figure. He would have been better than Malcolm McDowell.
I'll allow it.
Two? Why, how did you guys forget the Weasel?
Oh, God damn it. Fucking Pauly Shore.
The Weasel would have been an amazing character in this movie.
All right. So we're at the end of the movie. All the surviving crossmen bow down in front of Julia.
Are we still going through the plot?
No. Hey,
what about the weasel?
I have a question for you guys, okay?
Okay.
So you're a citizen of the Fist of the North Star cinematic universe. You know, the defeat Fistiverse? Of Shin... The Fistiverse. The defeat of Shin opens up this giant power vacuum. So what's next for the City of the Southern Cross? What happens next?
Well, it's weird to me that everyone bowed to Julia. Because, one, okay, I'm glad that she had more to do in the movie than she did in the anime, because she was just a trophy.
Who is Julia? Is that downtown Julie Brown's character?
No, that's the
is that her name in the... Is that the weasel?
It's the girlfriend.
It's the girlfriend.
Polly Shore?
The one with the seeds.
I was wondering if the Wicked Witch of the East and the Wicked Witch of the West could beat the Fist of the South Star and the North Star. So, there's a lot of compass talk.
Yeah,
I think
you could probably make that happen if you cast Polly Shore in one of the roles.
You mean the weasel?
Yeah, the weasel.
Mike, what was your favorite part of the movie?
Ah, Jesus. I probably liked Clint Howard the most.
Damn it. God damn it. That was going to be my answer.
Of course it was your pick. Clint Howard was, like, out of place and weird, but I just love Clint Howard a lot, so, like...
Okay, I like the fact that they got Malcolm McDowell. I did not like the fact that he didn't have a half an hour long uncut love scene.
None of us care about anything involving the movie. None of us care.
Okay, you know what? My favorite part actually has something to do with the movie. So Shin had these big plans. Did you see, like, the blueprints he had, like, set up and everything?
Yeah.
It was just, like, making modifications. Like, this is going to be my palace and my, you know, post-apocalyptic paradise or some shit. And he's, like, making all kinds of modifications. So I like the fact that not only did he learn martial arts, but he apparently went to someone's school of martial arts and engineering to be able to figure out... Like, I'm going to, like, draw up these blueprints and make the best goddamn city the Southern Cross has ever seen. So, I really appreciated that attention to detail.
I like the fact that he had a plan.
Speaking of Shin, I saw Shin Godzilla recently, and I didn't know what Shin meant. Like, what does that sort of mean in Japan? And so I looked it up, and there's a couple different meanings for it, but it basically means either true or God, or like God incarnate. So is Shin in this movie named that because he's kind of supposed to be thought of as like a God incarnate?
I think it was just named after Shin Ramen, which is probably the best ramen you can buy.
Okay, thanks for
I think he was
up.
Literally named after a Shin.
I think he's named after Shin-chan.
Oh, bringing me back.
I did not like how Malcolm McDowell was killed by just Shin shooting him.
Yeah, that
God.
Was a
martial arts movie, there was an awful lot of gunplay.
Yeah.
Tony Randall, the guy who directed this, also directed Hellraiser 2 and a couple episodes of the Power Rangers. So you know he's got some chops, right?
Yeah.
Dear God.
Hellraiser 2 is good.
Yeah, okay.
No, Hellraiser 3.
Did you guys know that there was a fist baby?
He also wrote Hellraiser 3, if I remember
right.
No,
guys, Jay just said the word fist baby. What?
What is a fist
baby? There was a fist baby out of this movie. Gary Daniels, that's his name, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The main guy. Ken, yeah.
Ken, yeah. He liked his role in this movie so much, he named his son Kenshiro.
Yeah.
God damn it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the guy who played Shin, Costas Mandylor, went on to do a couple Saw movies. They both
Gary Daniels, he's a legit fighter.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I was looking up, he had like something like 22 fights, or no, like closer to 30, and he won like 22 of them, and most of them by knocking people out.
He has I looked this up. He has a better professional fight record than Jean-Claude Van Damme. Terrible actor.
Yeah. Well. That's why I didn't like the fighting all that much in the movie. Like, maybe people couldn't keep up with him or something, but I feel like it should have been a little bit... The fight scenes should have been a little bit stronger.
If you get a Gary Daniels, you really need to show off why you got a Gary Daniels.
That's right.
You get George Clooney or Al Pacino, you're going to use them for their acting, right? You get Gary Daniels, he's got to kick some ass.
Wait, sorry, can I back up for a second? Chris, did you say Costas Mandylor?
Yes. That's the guy who played Shin.
That's his name.
I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Well, so I'm freaked out right now because when I was at work earlier today, my boss has directed some Lifetime original movies, two of them. And I asked him today who was in the movie, and one of the names that he rattled off was Costas Mandalore. And I stopped him. I said, back up for a second. Did you just say Costas Mandalore? So what are the fucking odds that twice in one day, some weirdo that I've never heard of gets brought up in two completely different movies, one of them a Lifetime movie and the other Fist of the Fucking North Star?
He's been in a ton of shit, too. He's got a pretty long IMDb.
I've never heard of him.
He's Costas Mandalore.
Who named someone that?
Someone's shitty mom.
Well, he's Australian, so I don't know what those... I mean, people in Australia usually seem to be named things like Mandalore or Brooks. So
it sounds like someone in the like Star Wars expanded universe.
Well, there's the Mandalorians.
Yeah,
the
right. Costas That's why I'm thinking of that.
The Costas Mandalorians are on the neighboring planet.
Rating time!
All right, we got to talk about ratings. Now, I think we need to be appropriate and rate this one 1 to 100 fingered chest wounds.
Mm.
So
I'm gonna abstain and call them nipples.
I still can't you imagine if he just like plunges his fingers, Shin plunges his fingers into your chest and pulls them out in nipples form.
Suck on these babies.
You can almost physically see it happen, right? Fingers in, and then it pulls out, and the skin like connects and like stays with the fingers for a bit, and then it snaps back, and it's just nipples.
It makes a little sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Ball, what do you rate this?
I'm gonna go 38. What is it?
Fingered chest wounds or nipples? Yeah. Fingered chest nipples.
I gotta go 38 fingered chest nipples for Fist of the North Star. Jay.
I am going to give Fist of the North Star 46 chest finger wounds.
Me as Michael Hayes, Fist of the North Star will give it a 33 fingered nipples rating.
Well, that checks out with Mike liking it the least of us, unless Chris gives it a lower rating.
Well, I'm not going to give it a lower rating, but it sounds like this is a pretty unpopular movie, and I got to go with it. I mean, I'm going to go with, like, let's say 47 fingered chest nipple wounds.
Wow, we're all hovering right around the same area, huh?
I think this movie was completely forgettable. The action scenes were not nearly what they should have been, considering the talent they had. Like, you get a legitimate fighter, and you're just going to shoot guns at people and not show anything.
Like we talked about how like there's no establishing shots, there's nothing else, but the general scene background stuff looked pretty good for
The production design was mostly fine.
There's no excuse for this movie to be as bad as it was, but it was incomprehensible and just fucking vomitocious.
They could have... That's a great word.
Vomitocious.
They could have just stuck a little bit more to how the anime develops, and it would have been totally fine. The story would have made way more sense. It would have been within the little martial arts ethos, superpower martial arts thing they're trying to do. It would have been fine. I think the rewrites kind of screwed it up. And I'm not even going to go into it, but they don't actually even include the most powerful character in the movie.
Really? Jay, no, we need you to go into that. What? How?
Okay. Well, in the anime, there is a character named Rao, and he is the older brother of Chris Penn's character and Ken. Brothers. There's three brothers. Rao gets this big army together, and he goes around and kills everybody. Ken and Shen really don't even fight that much. Like, Rao's already beat Shen to death by the time Ken finds him. And the big fight in the end is between Rao and Ken pretty much loses. And Rao lets him live because the little kid, the little girl in the movie, asks him to. She just says, hey, he's valuable to the future, and this big warlord's like, all right, fine, I'll let him live. I'm gonna go to our father's grave, peace, and leaves. So like, Ken doesn't really win. He doesn't get the girl in the end because she just inexplicably disappears from the end of the film, and he's still walking around trying to find her in the end.
Well, it seems to me like this is, I mean, I don't have any actual evidence to back this up, but it kind of seems like this is a pretty classic example of Hollywood suits, if you will, probably getting in there and meddling a little too much with what they wanted and what they thought the movie needed, and it just kind of getting watered down by sort of being too Americanized.
I think you're right.
I wouldn't even say that, Paul. I'd say it just sounds like your classic comic book movie.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, I sort of felt like the people who were involved with this to a certain extent were trying to give it some TLC and trying to make it work, but just the script that they had wasn't really going to work for it.
It would have been better had they taken the risks that the anime did.
You mean like an Iron Man movie or a Thor movie or a Captain America movie, right?
I don't watch comic book movies. I don't know.
You know, I gotta say, I think the biggest tragedy, though, is not using the brilliant anime ending theme song.
Oh, yeah? How's that go, Chris?
We gotta... darkness.
I can remember that.
We'll link it. We should link it down below.
I really do remember.
It's amazing. It's brilliant.
I don't know. I think they should have used Dimension Zero's "A Place to Die." No.
Oh, I was gonna do the drums.
Oh,
I think they should have used "Bare Naked Ladies" 1 week. You know, like, it's been 1 week since you looked at me.
Why the fuck would they do that?
Why not?
All right, I think we got it.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
And then Jay switches over to his more crunchy pedal. You know.
And then the drums just go like that.
Yeah. Al drops a stick and has to go back behind his drum set to retrieve it.
Are we still talking about Burnick Lady? Burnick
Lady? No. We were never.
And in fact, I think it's about time to wrap this up before Mike gets even more drunk and more clothes come off, because he's not wearing much as it is, and I want to finish this before the rest of it comes off.
My dickhead's hanging out.
Oh my god, I don't want to see that.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania...
I was struggling with this one, because I had a couple in my mind.
Hit us.
It's available on Amazon Prime. We have watched the first film in a prior 24-hour B movie marathon.
Oh my god, please be what I think it is.
We are going to watch Samurai Cop 2.
Yeah, baby. That's not what I thought, but I'm into it. Thank Christ.
There was a sequel to that?
Yeah, it just came out.
And it looks awesome.
God. Tommy Wiseau is in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yep, Tommy plays the bad guy, actually. And little early trivia for all you people out there: if you want to watch the movie before you listen to the next episode, just know that Tommy Wiseau had to read all of his lines on big cue cards off camera.
Great! Wow, I'm not surprised one bit.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook or Twitter at BMovieMania. You can also drop them a line at BMovieMania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!